Chapter 52. Darrow. Sungrave.
Bloody damn Bellona! What's he doing? There's three of them, Severo says from his perch on the ridgeline behind me. In reptile mode, our armour runs cold and has adaptive camouflage. Severo is difficult to make out on my ocular filters. From our vantage south of Sungrave, he monitors the approach from the south. I monitor the northwest. It is barren of life. The obsidians have come and gone. The story of Sungrave seems no different from the tale we saw everywhere along our route. Death, darkness, silence. The only difference is the cemetery of war machines that sprawls out before the city. Sungrave did not fall without a fight. We checked the machines and found frozen blues and greens inside, not obsidians at all. They had scars on their necks from pain collars, but it seems the enemy recycles and took the collars back from their corpses.
Three, I say absently. Should just be Cassius and Ori.
Three. I frown. Frost crackles under my grav boots as I slide down from my post, then jump 30 meters to join him in the shadows. He clings to the side of the dark rock like a gargoyle. Lyria, I ask. She shouldn't be off ship with that concussion. It's not the red. It's the Ra.
I pause.
He brought Diomedes? Unless Lyria gained 100 kilos overnight. Bellona's off mission. He's masturbating over his own honor still. Maybe you need to offer him the airlock.
Let me talk to him this time.
It's resolved, he says.
What do you mean?
Ain't your business.
Keep watch.
I descend from our position to keep Cassius at the base of the mountain. Sulfur crystals clatter as he sets down on his grav boots. His own god-killer suit mutates with the changing light. Nival night is waning, and the pitch blackness slowly erodes into a forge-like glow, sometimes caused by the refraction of the moon's volcanic light on the particle-thick air. I expect him to babble on about the armor. Instead, Cassius's voice is like that of a man attending a funeral.
These poor people. I've never seen anything like this.
You will again if Atalantion makes it to Mars, I reply.
Perhaps too maudlin.
You brought Diomedes?
Yes. Can't be just you and Severo making the plan every time. I'm more than a pretty face and an excellent pilot. The Ra needs to see this, Darrow. He deserves to see this. I know you think he's your enemy, but I was too once.
I nod, thinking. Was I so wrong to bring him? To not want him tortured? I know I've missed the war, but maybe that's a good thing. You and Severo are stuck in a brawl that you can't look up from.
Maybe, I offer him. But you should have asked, Cassius.
Oh, like Severo asked to torture him?
So much for my authority. How is it easier to control an army of millions than my two best friends? I frown. Is Cassius a best friend? Weird how comfortable I am with the thought.
Ori's grav bike groans to a halt behind Cassius. Diomedes looms behind Ori in the bike's second seat. Even with her slender lines hidden by the bulk of her pulse armor, she looks like a child sitting in front of a golem. Unarmored, he wears a boxy Evo suit. His face is hidden behind the dusky visor. His hands are secured behind him to the bike.
Your idea, I ask Ori of Diomedes as she joins us.
It's clear she has a deep emotional connection to the man. She admitted as much to me after Severo and Cassius fought.
No, this was all Cassius, Ori says. While Diomedes was one of my masters, you seem to forget that I chose to leave him. I am a traitor to him, in more ways than one. He has not spoken to me, only to Cassius. I said we should follow your orders, Darrow. Diomedes may be a man who cannot tell a lie, but Cassius really has no idea how dangerous he is.
Cassius presses the issue. Diomedes had kin here, Darrow. If you let him search for them, he's agreed to give you his parole.
Ori, you know him best. Will he keep his parole? I ask. I know you're on our side, Ori. I promise I will not think your judgment compromised.
He is a gentle, sensitive man.
Cassius and I both look at the hulking beast sitting chained to the bike. His list of wartime heroics sings a very different tune.
He is also fair, kind, and honourable. But I have never seen him at war, and he has never seen his home destroyed. I cannot say what he will or will not do, especially if he thinks you are involved in this.
Me?
The Ra considered you a grave threat, a new age Hannibal. Now many of your old braves are here.
I wince at that.
He spared my life, Dara, Cassia says. He doesn't like me. He did it because I fought with honor.
Yeah, but I'm not you, I say.
I'm certainly a main war objective, and you always forget. Golds have different rules for golds than they do for reds.
Darrow, look around. The Rim is out of the war against Mars, Cassia says. This is worse than anything you ever did. If we show him that, well, we could do worse than having a helpful Ra out here.
Cassius really is trying to be a moral knight, if only the world cared. Yet, I am tempted. Torture did not work on the man, so perhaps this is the path to understanding Kaliki, and maybe more. Ori says,
I've known Diomedes for 13 years. You knew his father Romulus, yes?
Her expressionless helmet looks back at me, but her face shows on my HUD, captured by the cameras in her helmet. I know his uncle far better, I say.
Diomedes could be like his uncle, his father always said so. But Diomedes wants to be his father. His mother, Dido, led the dragon armada. She is likely dead. His kin were in Sungrave. To break his honor, his parole, would be the ultimate dishonor to the dead, and he loved them more than anything.
Apparently bored of eavesdropping, Severo jumps from a ledge above and lands on the bike just in front of Diomedes. He squats there for a moment, then jumps back to us and lands in a flurry of sulfur.
Said he gives his parole to me. Let's stop wasting time.
You sure? I ask.
He's in an Evo suit. I'm in this. He slags around. He's Chowder.
I nod to Cassius and get Diomedes off the bike.
Ori begins to show me on the map where the access to the family tunnels lie. I stop her mid-sentence. She hasn't yet seen Sungrave itself.
We won't have to use the family tunnels, I say. The front door is wide open. Sungrave was once a city that demanded awe. Centuries ago, Akari Aura carved dragons into the mountain range that hosts the top levels of the city. He did it with orbital lasers before his red started to burrow into the moon itself. The city rose from the frozen desert as proof of the ingenuity, grandeur, and determination of House Ra, and it stretched beneath the desert, deeper and deeper, as testament to the centuries of prosperity overseen by Akari's ancestors. Like an iceberg, most of it lies unseen beneath the surface. Even now, fallen, dark, its dragon statues broken, and radiation slithering from their shattered bodies like blood, I feel puny in its shadow, and even lesser in the shadow of Fa's accomplishment. Many believed Sungrave impregnable. I know I did. Set within and beneath a mountain, the Citadel of Ra was powered by the tidal heatings of the moon itself, and linked through tunnels to subterranean greenhouses. Even with a half-strength garrison, it could maintain its shields against orbital bombardment and feed its people for years, while its natural features and tiered defensive fortifications made it all but impervious to ground assault. Supposedly. It would have taken days to scout all the entrances into the mountain city, but we haven't the time. Besides, nothing except our party moves on the south-facing slope. Not at the main breach, nor amongst the collapsed towers or twisted gun batteries, nor even down below where the surface waste meets the great and undamaged ground gates into the mountain. Entering the city via the breach, a smooth tunnel 40 meters wide, littered with broken war machines and frozen defenders, is like descending into a necropolis. They died in many places, the defenders of Sungrave. In the hallways, in the great grottos once rich with vegetation, in fallback bunkers defending civilians, and in tramways and broad avenues beneath vast domed ceilings glowing with radiant fauna and waterfalls flowing from underground rivers. First it was the urban phalanxes who died in their grey and blue armour, and then it was the auxiliaries in grey and blue livery, and then the citizenry in simple cotton or wool vestments of the hierarchy. Sometimes the bodies are heaped in public agoras. Sometimes they are pinned to the walls above empty bottles of spirits. Mostly they lay where they died, which was either in flight or cowering in redoubts or trying to stand firm against the tide. The pulse fields that provide the atmosphere to the city are mostly intact the deeper we press into the city. We doff our helmets. The air is breathable, cold, and thick with the noxious sweet smell of death. With Severo scouting ahead, we reach the spine without encountering a single living being. Usually there would be scavengers. Wide enough for 100 men to walk abreast, the spine is a grand stone stairway that links the levels of the subterranean city together. A black stone arch, carved with scenes from the Ra family's history, has been decorated with a new and odious embellishment. The decaying head of a giant dragon. I smell its stench even from the floor. Severo floats up to inspect the head. It's big enough to fit 4 men Severo's size in its mouth.
Abraxas,
Bori murmurs, and looks back at Diomedes. We have not taken his helmet off or unbound him, so his expression is hidden.
The sigil beast of the Ra herd. It was his grandfather's dragon.
Wonder where the body is, Severo says when he returns from his inspection. The garter, I suggest. He grunts. Think they ate it?
It would make sense, wouldn't it? I say.
Wait, why would you eat it? Cassius asks.
Old religious rite, their way of absorbing the power of a defeated foe. What happened in tribal wars on Mars's poles back in the day. Far ate Sephi's heart, according to the briefings. Seems he's reigniting the practice. We move on. The defenders made a last stand only a few levels down the spine. Grey, green, orange, red, brown. Their corpses lie together. Equal in death, if not in life. I feel exposed seeing the bodies twisted together. So many of the problems I've caused are because I valued some lives over others. The core over the rim. The people of Mars over the people of Mercury. Seeing what Far has done to Io, seeing the dead of a city I planned to liberate one day, fills me with guilt and dread in equal measure. But there is something else there, an urge to right these wrongs. I know that's folly. I no longer have my army, and the Volk have abandoned the dream of Io and Ragnar, and I know much of that is my fault. It is vain to think I can do anything out here, but my eyes wander to Diomedes and wonder what he's thinking behind that helmet. No one is sorry to leave the spine behind for the promenade level. When we reach the pedestrian juncture where the tunnels to the government district and the market divide, I tell my companions that we are separating. Severo, carry on with Ori and Cassius to the market and light the Omega torch. I hesitate. I've got business with Diomedes. Severo doesn't even pause. He keeps walking toward the market.
You sure you don't want me to come with you?
Cassius asks. No, I need you two to work together. Can you? I ask. He looks after Sevro. Maybe. He left me a bottle of moonswill. Huh? I think he's making it in the machine shop. Lyria can vouch. It's decent stuff. She has a head injury, Cassius. She only had a dram. It was an olive branch, I think. Ori and Cassius follow Sevro down the tunnel toward the market, leaving me alone with Diomedes for the first time. He's not as tall as I am, but he is broader, and I remember the scars on his body and the calluses on his hands. I approach him carefully and wonder if I'm being a fool, trying to redeem my sin against the father by treating with the son. Yet I take off his helmet. His mane of dark hair falls out. When I see his eyes, I feel his bottomless sorrow. They are shot red from crying and panicked like a child's. I imagined a stoic warrior beneath the helmet. Instead, I see a man whose world is in tatters and his home filled with ghosts. I do not have to feign the sympathy in my voice. Diomedes, I am sorry for your loss. I'm told you had kin here. He does not reply. You gave your parole to Cassius, but I need you to look me in the eye and give it to me. If you do, we can search for your kin together. He looks me in the eye, like I've spoken a foreign tongue. Then he blinks, understanding, and gives me a solemn nod. I motion him to turn, his feet shuffle, and I unlock his cuffs.